Safety, dependability, and power. Chevy Silverado isn't happy unless the work is hard and the day is long. No wonder Silverado is America's number one best-selling retail pickup truck. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Yes, it's another edition of the Chicago Way, the greatest podcast in Chicago. John Kass, Jeff Carlin, and with us right now, Kristen McQuarrie of the editorial board of the Chicago Tribune.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning.
So, of the many questions we have to deal with today, issues, serious issues, there's one that's probably the most serious of all. It is the second week of May, now going into the third week of May.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And it's about time to start planting tomatoes.
Yes.
I put something on Facebook. It's funny what you put on Facebook. If I put a picture of my dog looking at some ribs, everybody.
Right. I saw that.
I even saw Ed Rex Hupke, like, right in something. And if you put in something about Hillary and Bill, or you have political discussions, but not the intensity of, like, you don't get 400 likes on it. And the same thing with tomatoes. I want to grow the perfect tomato, so I've been asking people, and you can find me on Facebook. I'll probably write a column on it. If I do, I'll post it, then you can tell me your tips, because I really want to grow.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. Is that tomato music?
No.
All right.
Farming
really want,
music.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It sort of worked.
It was a theme of this old house. I was looking for a store.
Yeah, that was nice. I thought you were going to find Green Acres. but I want to grow the best tomato.
Mm-hmm.
How do I grow the best tomato, Kristen?
Well, I've been looking at your commenters because I want to grow the best tomato also. We do grow tomatoes, but I do nothing special. I throw them in the ground. I put up some fencing around them.
Tomato cages?
Tomato cages.
The flimsy ones? Everyone's like, no, you got to get the big ones.
You got to get the big ones. And you do have to, we use the same ones every year. Don't do the flimsy ones. But the first year that we planted tomatoes, probably 5 years ago, for some reason, I thought you were supposed to pluck off the flower. You don't pluck off the flower.
Nice,
that's
Kristen.
That's the tomato.
That's
See,
right.
I know.
See,
I'm gifted. I'm a gifted gardener. But I would also, I love, there's just
that's
nothing
really nice,
that beats.
That's really nice, by the way.
Yeah. I was pulling off the actual flower and wondering why I wasn't getting any tomatoes. I mean, I love a summer tomato more for its smell even than its taste. If there was a perfume you could bottle of the way a summer-grown, homegrown tomato smells, I would wear it.
Once you cut it. But in the garden, the tomatoes, I must say, have a sort of smell that reminds me of the docks in a third world country when I was a kid.
Yeah. Pungent.
Pungency? I could see the River Benin and the slaughterhouse and the kids swimming next to the slaughterhouse.
Oh, my goodness.
And there's a house of ill repute, and there's a bar with two 50-gallon drums and a plank. That's the bar.
Okay, so you don't like the
where
smell.
We're listening to the Temptations on an 8-track, and that's all I'm going to say.
That's quite a universe you just built on based on the smell of tomatoes, John.
That's just my own mind.
I love it. No,
the mind of Casso.
That's why we're here.
How do I grow the best tomato, Jeff Carlin?
The best tomatoes, I don't know really. I'm a terrible green thumb. I know the basics, but I'm
eggshells, coffee, how much and what?
I have no idea, honestly. But what I do know, the best tomato I've ever had was grown in West Virginia.
Wow. So you remember your best tomato. Yeah.
What was it called? The Hillary Rising?
Nice. No. It was the Feel the Burn tomato. No. I was doing a service trip with my church to help prepare homes for people in poor areas of West Virginia, which there are a lot. And one of their thank yous was that they made lunch for us, and they had tomatoes they'd grown in their soil on their farm that their family lived for generations,
mm-hmm.
and it was the best. It was bright, vibrant red, and it was the best tomato I've ever eaten in my entire life. Mm.
So how do we grow them? Everybody listen to me. Find us on Facebook, and please tell me how to grow the best tomato.
Yes.
I want to grow the ones that, like, the Godfather grew, but I don't want to die of a heart attack in there. But I want...
slice them with it.
I want them tall. I want them on steaks. I want to trim the suckers, but... When you trim the suckers, are you trimming the wrong thing? Like, I don't want to do what you did and take all the flowers
off. Don't take my advice on tomato growing. But I also don't know the right variety. So I'll wait until everybody weighs in.
Early Girl, Big Boy, Beefsteak, Brandywine. For some reason, Brandywine stuck in my head because it's kind of like a Tolkien thing.
Mm-hmm.
A million varieties. The yellow tomatoes.
Cherry tomatoes.
The heirlooms.
Little ones you can just pluck off the cherry tomatoes.
The sweet 100s. Those are good.
Yeah, those are good. We grow those. We also grew a plant one time and we couldn't figure out. We thought it was, you know, like genetically modified. We couldn't figure out why it had this little paper cover over the top of each piece of fruit. It was actually a tomatillo?
Oh, tomatillo, yeah. Tomatillo.
Oh, yeah. We had a whole thing of tomatillos. We kept throwing away
the
fruit thinking it was tomatoes gone awry. And I'm just really
and
exposing
how do we serve
my
them?
Ignorance.
We slice them. I'd say I like them.
Tomatillos or just?
No, not tomatillos. Regular tomatoes.
BLT. A summer BLT with pepper smoked bacon.
With the Newski's bacon.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Right, Jeff? And how about?
A nice caprese salad. You know, you take the tomatoes, slice them kind of
right,
thick.
Romas, yeah.
A little bit of extra virgin olive oil, a little bit of.
Very simple, right?
Yeah. We do at home. We have a mortar and pestle, and I have pink salt, the Himalayan pink salt.
You climb all the way up
I
there?
I did. I paid somebody, and they brought it to me.
Sherpa Jeff Carlin.
It was, exactly. Right. It was my friend Amazon. I take thyme, rosemary rather, and I put it in the pesto with the salt, and I grind it up. And then so you do that over
sprinkle
the. Sprinkle a little of that over, and then some fresh cracked pepper. Oh,
you guys
so
are killing me. You are killing
How
me.
How about tomatoes, beefsteak tomatoes, anchovies, red onion, and a little blue cheese? Is it too much? Or maybe just the plain tomato eaten.
Like a fruit.
You know what? Here's another word picture for you, right? I'm in my garden. The White Sox are on the radio. Sometimes I'm barefoot. I don't know why. I like to feel the earth like the peasant that I am in my toes. To feel, because you talk to them, you know. You talk to the earth, talk to the plants. Listen to the White Sox. A can of cold Hams beer. The beer refreshing. And then you grab a tomato and you have a salt shaker and you just rinse it, shake it, a little salt. And eat it right there, like Tom Bleepin Sawyer.
Sounds
right?
lovely.
Absolutely. That's summer.
That's summer. Okay, so people will hopefully help me and Kristen and Jeff grow the best tomatoes. And I don't know anything about Epsom salt, so somebody's going to explain that to me. I thought that's what you put your feet in. And in the meantime, something else happened, is happening now. We have Hillary losing to Bernie Sanders.
Again.
What's going on? What is going on?
You know, I think his followers are so dedicated. And so he keeps saying, I'm staying here until the end. We're going to try to get every vote we can. And I think he also feels a sense of obligation for his supporters who have been so loyal to stay in the race, even though it's mathematically impossible.
Like Tim Robbins?
Tim Robbins?
Yeah, the actor.
In
Shawshank Redemption?
Oh, sure. Oh, of course.
And then poor Tim Robbins. Okay, here's the issue. I put a picture of Queen Cersei next to a picture of, and they're both, she's angry, and Hillary Clinton, the angry Hillary face. And immediately I'm hit with, you sexist pig.
Right.
You misogynist. I didn't say anything about, are you one, these women do it or men do it. Just showed human beings doing something. Immediately I'm nailed sexist, misogynist, you hate women, you love Trump, which anybody reads my column knows not true. And I'm wondering what is going on with this quick hit thing.
I too was called a sexist this week. In fact, I have
because you are as the man you are,
as the man I am.
Right,
that's always the first thing that comes to mind when someone mentions Kristen McQueer. That's sexist.
That's sexist.
And man,
because
that's the second thing.
I wrote a column about Sarah Palin, and I did not talk about the way she looked or her clothing or anything. It was policy based
and her cut of mind
and her exactly. The email is rolling in as we speak. One guy from Connecticut picked up on it and basically wrote a whole email to me about how I'm part of the problem with the war on women. He called me a catty bitch. Because, you know, as a woman, I guess I can only write about dudes. I don't know. I'm not, as a woman, I'm not allowed
what
to
is with the tribalism
write an opinion
with people?
Column about another woman, or I am part of, I'm part of the problem. Sexism.
What is with the tribal? I mean, this is perfect for, sorry, for the meat puppets. They get in their little tribes. They're the talking heads on TV, whether it's Paul Begala or whoever on the right, Karl Rove, herd them into their little stupid camps, and then they start screaming at each other. What is the point of that?
I don't know. I really, it
has
driven me.
Do they believe either one of these people are legit?
No, and I don't watch a lot of television news anymore or any of those, you know, if it's election night or something else. But I don't want to sit there and watch two people scream at each other. So it's.
But don't you have to watch it because we're in the business of knowing what people are saying and why, and it's part of the whole drama? No, Jeff?
Oh, yeah. I have to watch a lot of stuff I don't want to.
Like I don't watch George.
You sound like first world problems.
I know,
like,
right?
God, I have to sit and watch TV.
I know, right?
It's, certainly, but yeah, I agree.
I don't watch the Sunday shows.
I really don't either.
At all.
I don't. You know what I've started doing? So I'm a radio geek, and I listen to podcasts. Ours, of course.
Yeah.
And I love AM radio. And so I have on my drive home, I will download a podcast of maybe 60 Minutes or Chicago Tonight or something that I, you know, something that was on CNN that I would like to watch without actually having to watch it. And then I just listen to it.
How do you do that? Because I'm technologically challenged.
I'll help you. You go to the apps. You go to
on these phones that we have Tribune issue.
Yes. And right. you choose which shows you want to download. And then it just feeds you. Like I listened to 60 Minutes yesterday on my drive home. It's nice. It's
I always listen to Roll Con every day.
Absolutely.
Every
of
evening.
Course.
While I'm driving home.
Yes.
7 WGN 7
in during and commercial Anna. Breaks.
Yeah. Right. No,
I listen to 60
I appreciate
Minutes.
That.
And you know what else well about that show, by the way?
Yes.
You know, I've done radio with Kristen. This is like kind of radio, but we don't have to stop every 3 minutes and talk. I listen to Anna and Ro. They really work well together.
They do.
And it's got to be tougher to be, you know, we're opinion journalists, right? But not a a straight journalist that doesn't give opinion, and then to open up on the air.
Right.
It's got to be difficult. She's doing a great job with that. And
yeah,
Roll,
she is, absolutely.
Both of them together.
Yeah, we
they're
should.
Really doing
and
well.
Just in case our listeners are unaware, Jeff is the executive producer
yes,
of
correct.
The show. Of
enough
Ro
butt
and
kissing
Anna.
Now?
Yeah. Thank
enough?
You. Thank you, thank you.
Really, my lips are chapped from the butt kissing I've been doing.
Kristen, have you caught up on Game of Thrones yet?
No. You know what? I don't think I'm going to. I think
oh,
I'm.
Come on,
I'm,
you
I
and
thought
Betty.
We sold you on the
what
sex
have,
and the
like
violence.
A, is there a bet? Is there a thing? You and Betty, my wife won't.
I know.
So awesome.
I'm with her. I love how in your last or your column for Mother's Day, was it the Mother's Day column where you said, A, she won't talk to you because she doesn't want to be quoted.
Right.
And B, she won't talk to you because she doesn't care any about Game of Thrones. And
she
I'm
doesn't.
With her. I it's just
you guys
just,
are so lame.
I don't know. It doesn't feel that appealing to me. I can't. And now that I'm off the bandwagon, it's tough to get back on. So I'm finishing up Homeland. I'm years behind.
David. Homeland is so soapy now. I don't want to spoil it for you.
Okay. I don't spoil it for me. I haven't seen the last season. I'm one season behind.
Right. Wait a second. We just had a thing about spoilers.
I know. But you. I mean.
But I'll give it to you because we're friends.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
But it is becoming.
I mean, I can turn. If you guys want to talk about it, I can turn my headset off and just read your lips until you're done.
No.
No, that's all right. Okay. We might have listeners. We don't want to spoil it for them.
It's good summer. You know, summer. Like, I'm going to read Game of Thrones.
Are you?
And I made a couple enemies in that. Not enemies, but, you know, usually I have a big mouth when it comes to just saying what's on my mind.
Really?
In the newsroom. And there were two
shocking.
People. Two people that were talking, one editing my column and another friend editor. And they're both like, have you read Game of Thrones, John? And I'm like, my God. I mean, don't you want to just shoot yourself if you read that thing? I mean, it's the worst writing.
So.
I have to say, it's really not the best writing or editing. But none of that genre is.
Yeah.
There really isn't that great writing in
the
world.
And
let's admit it.
And the show is just wonderful cinematography. I mean, that
great.
If I was going, if I, when I was watching it, it was just like, I've never seen anything like that on the small screen. So
it's just gorgeous.
It is.
Be forewarned, John, that this current season is, they've gone past the books.
My sons have already told me this,
okay.
And I know this, I've already read
it. Okay. I know Kristen's got to get run, but she had a good story about Greek culture that she I'd like to get to.
Yeah. So my son, I was helping him study for his social studies test last night, and there were just a couple of paragraphs about all different types of cultures around the world, and they touch on Greek culture. And so that, in conjunction with My Big Fat Greek Wedding Part 2.
Awesome movie.
Awesome. Love so it. you saw Part 2?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. I saw what you wrote about the first one. And so I just wanted to know what are the myths versus facts about Greek culture? Like the lamb in the driveway is
a vegetable. You know that. Is the lamb in the driveway myth?
Or legend.
Or true?
True.
Head on. Head was off
because Betty demands the head off because Jim Kirk's daughter, sometimes,
yes.
Right, Jim Kirk, he came over one year with his kids.
Oh,
and
no.
She saw, I think Mary-Kate saw that head and said, Daddy, he's cooking a dog. And then Betty was running around trying to get cereal for her to eat. We didn't have cereal for a little kid to eat.
Oh, man.
So I've been prohibited from head. And that's too bad because there are many Greek waiters who I talked to about this, and they – one guy says, "Oh, in Astoria, New York, we do the head. You stir it with lemon, pepper, and salt, and then put it back in the fridge until it's cold."
I just can't.
I'm
imagine.
Like, "Oh, brain jello, awesome!"
Right? Oh, you like crush the skull, no, you squeeze
just
out the
crack it.
You just...
God, you don't want to crush it because then the brains will go everywhere. But you crack it, make a little hole, and then pour some squeeze of lemon, salt, and pepper, a little spoon in there, and then chill it. And I would wrap it in tinfoil.
You get some of those summer tomatoes.
I would wrap it in tinfoil and put it in Kristen's fridge so that she could open up the... What's this? Is this some...
Oh, my God. You're losing me.
What other Greek
culture
questions?
So the wedding, too. You mentioned, and this was a column of yours from 2002 interviewed the star. And I can't... Her name is escaping me, but she was a Chicago native, I think.
Bardalos.
Yes.
Yeah, Bardalos.
And you said that you got married in Bridgeview.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where your reception was, too.
Yeah.
So was it the similar, you know, what's the alcohol that everybody does the shots of?
We're coming up on our 30th wedding anniversary.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you. And I'm trying to figure out what we're going to do to celebrate that.
Take her on vacation.
Yeah,
will
I know.
Will you?
Where?
Do you see me looking at you sternly? I'll think about it.
There's got to be some place around. I said, Betty, you want to go to New York? She's like, no, I don't want to go to New York. But there's got to be some, like, great country inn, restaurant-y, walking around, but high-end food or something.
Yes. Oh,
right,
yes.
I don't have to walk too much because
right.
I'm fat, but just at least pretend to walk.
Have you been to Ireland?
I could. Oh, yeah. Let's go for a week. I want to go.
You should.
The greatest
land. I mean, that is a place
land.
Where you. It's
very
beautiful.
Romantic.
You just have lots
Can
of...
Can I wear a kilt?
Please. Please
I will
do?
Not kiss the Blarney Stone. Yeah, we got married in Bridgeview. We were married in St. Nicholas Greek Orthodox Church. Same kind of wedding. The root of Orthodox, the root, the Greek word, root.
Please, the rest of the show, please.
Never changing.
Mm-hmm.
And, we got married at Nico's Banquet Hall on 79th in Harlem. You know, I know now people go to, you know, great hotels, and they spend a lot of money. They spend a lot of money. I had extra money, so I kept the bar open till 4 in the morning.
Wow.
Just dropped a few $100 kit, you know what I mean? And bingo, the bar stayed open.
Mm-hmm.
We kept the band there. Everyone partied. It was Memorial Day that weekend. Everyone partied their brains out. You can't do that at a hotel downtown.
Mm-hmm. They kick you out. And you need $50,000 for the bar.
And then you're thinking, wouldn't I want to have a down payment on a house?
Right.
Why do people go to hotels? Why not banquet halls? You get better food at a banquet hall.
The whole wedding industry has just become so elaborate.
Fancy.
Oh, it's so elaborate. It's I don't know. Every wedding I go to now, this one outdoes the last one and the last one. And sometimes I think just, you know, a wedding outdoors in a barn with beer and fried chicken or something would be just so refreshing instead of having to get all dressed up.
I like the dressing up because I can't go to church without having a suit on.
Yeah.
I just can't.
You're old-fashioned.
I cannot go with flip-flops and flip-flops shorts to church. No way.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to have this discussion on where to have a wedding and where I'm taking my wife for our anniversary.
I'm going to do some research for
would you.
I'll be your travel agent.
Are you going to come back next time?
Sure.
All right, Kristen McQuarrie, thanks for joining us
today.
Thanks
for having me.
In the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Even the mere mention of the word is sufficient to induce panic. tomato.
Attack of the killer tomatoes. Attack of the killer tomatoes. They'll beat you, bash you, squish you, mash you, chew you up for brunch, and finish you off for dinner or lunch.
Our next guest is Tom Bevan, the founder and publisher, boss of Real Clear Politics, probably one of the most, if not the most influential website in the country. What he does is read every op-ed piece written in the history of mankind every day, and then he picks the best ones, a combination from the left, from the right, the center, and he's got that Real Clear Politics average that everyone on television and print refer to in terms of the national political race that we have for president. Good morning, Tom.
Hey, John, how are you? You just called me boss. Does that mean I'm like Boss Madigan?
No, you're just boss, like a boss. You oh, like okay. A boss. Like a boss, like that.
Just wanted to clarify that.
And speaking of being a boss, man, I've been seeing you on TV a lot lately. You're doing a lot more media out.
Doing some media, yeah. We're trying to – actually, all of our folks have been on TV quite a bit. It's been – because the race has been so crazy. I mean, I do think that the amount of coverage that has – this race has gotten is really remarkable. I think that bubble deflated a bit once Trump clinched it in Indiana. You know, all that convention chaos that everyone was really gearing up for has really – that bubble has deflated. I think, but still, the amount of coverage has been pretty spectacular, and of course, we've all, you know, had our share in that.
You, it did deflate a little bit with Paul Ryan saying, "I don't know if I want to, you know, do the Trump thing," and then everyone jumping on the Republican writers or right wing writers who supported big government conservatism now are very conservative and don't like it anymore. The left, obviously, is trying to paint him as a racist and a psycho to help Hillary. And it looked like the bubble kind of, I don't know, was open, you know, was fizzing air a little bit. And then an odd thing happened. Polls came out showing him and Hillary neck and neck in the battleground states, Pennsylvania, Florida, Ohio. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I think it was if this cycle has taught us anything or should have taught us anything, it's humility about understanding what we don't know, right?
Right.
All these pundits, that are
right.
out there who said Trump could never win the nomination are now saying Trump's a disaster in the general election, right? It's a 64 Goldwater debacle. Republicans are going to lose the Senate. They may even lose the House. They are so sure that Trump is going to be a complete disaster. And I have always been one who said, let's just wait and see what happens. I mean, certainly he has unfavorable ratings that are sky high, and he has some big vulnerabilities. But guess
so
what?
She.
Hillary Clinton has, yeah, she's got major vulnerabilities. So we don't know how this. So I thought that those polls, again, it's just one single poll,
right.
One single batch of polls from battleground states. So let's see where we go from here. But it did provide, I think, a needed corrective in the sense that we don't know what's going to happen. This race, I think, could it be a wipeout, debacle for Republicans with Trump at the top? Yeah, it could.
It could be the other way, too.
It could be the other way. I think we've been living in an era of a very divided electorate. Hillary has 100% name recognition. Trump's got 100% name recognition. So I think we will see a close race either way. And I think that's my best guess. But again, I'm not pretending that I know exactly what's going on or can predict the future. Nobody can. I think, again, that's one of the lessons that I learned this cycle, and I seem to be in the minority in that regard.
One thing you do, you have, I think, an advantage over many of us in that you know, we all try to read in the business as much as we can, but you read probably more than anybody. And I'm wondering, have you noticed, how the One thing that I haven't written about, and I probably should, is how the how conservative writers have tried to reposition themselves as small government conservatives after years of supporting intervention in foreign countries and big government faith-based initiatives and so forth. How does that, I've always wondered, I mean, maybe this is the forum, but I got you on the air and I have to ask you, how does that, how's that been changing with Trump now? Do people find religion again? They found their religion?
Yeah, a little bit, to a certain degree. I mean, Laura Ingraham is a pro, she's been pretty much pro-Trump, and she has a piece that's out, which I think does a pretty good job. Actually, Jonah Goldberg wrote a piece this week in the LA Times, and he's been he's a never Trump guy, right? He's part of the the Washington conservative elite, you know, National Review, Weekly Standard, all those folks who you know, so they did support, you know, supported McCain, supported Romney, supported George W. Bush, to your point. And now they simply cannot vote for Trump because they don't like him as a person. They don't think he's moral enough. They don't think he's conservative on enough issues, et cetera, et cetera. So he makes a pretty good case from his perspective. And Laura Ingraham writes in Life Zet, which is her new publication. She writes that, you know, it's Trump versus Clinton, Obama and Bush. And she goes through and makes the opposite case, which is exactly what you just said. All these folks, she says, look, I would have preferred someone else, but Trump's the Republican nominee. He won it fair and square. And so the choice is you either vote for him or you're going to help elect Hillary Clinton. And Hillary Clinton, she says, is going to be worse for Republicans across the board on all these issues. And in fact, she agrees with George W. Bush in terms of foreign policy, immigration, and some of these other issues, than more with George W. Bush than with where Trump is, at least right now. So, and she makes a very persuasive case. So I urge readers to go and read both of those. I mean, it's almost a textbook case of a perfect example of a differing arguments coming from the right, pro-Trump versus the never-Trump crowd. And it's pretty illuminating, and you can decide where for yourself where you come down on that.
Every morning I wake up, and the first thing I do is read the Chicago Tribune website, of course, and then go right to Real Clear Politics. And I'm looking at it right now on my handheld phone. There is that story you talk about with Laura Ingraham that I'm looking at now. Every day you can go to this site, get a great – you don't have to watch the – I don't watch the talk shows anymore, Tom, because I could just go to your site and get the video clips that are important. You know, I can skip all the nonsense.
Well, I appreciate that. That's one of the things we try and do is and I've said this before, but I mean, I think the real value in our site is twofold. I mean, you can use it as sort of a cheat sheet. You can just check in and see, okay, here's, you know, I see what the latest polls are. I see, okay, here are a couple video clips, headlines, see what writers have written what, and you can spend 5 minutes on it, or you can spend, if you've got the time and the desire, you can spend 5 hours going, clicking through and reading all those articles, or, you know, digging in the guts of a poll if you want to see some more data on that. So it really does serve that dual purpose for people who don't have a lot of time, just want to get caught up, or people who are really trying to figure out what's going on and you know, who do this stuff because they live and breathe it, and it's part of, you know, it helps them with their job.
Tom Bevin, Real Clear Politics. I have a question now that, and this is going to be self-serving because I'm quoting you, although people can hear it, but I mean, I might quote you in the paper. And that is the same thing we talked about in terms of trends and how people come off and policies and opinions come off and ideologies come off over time. People should know you live in the Chicago area. You watch the Chicago news closely. When 2 years ago or 3 years ago, Rahm Emanuel, when he was discussed in the national press, as the incoming gatekeeper of Barack Obama, so I'm talking more than 2 years ago at the beginning of his term, Rahm Emanuel is treated one way. I think maybe a lot of butt kissing in terms of access. Now, though, I wonder how you see how Rahm Emanuel is being treated and where does he exist in the political universe nationally and Chicago nationally. With respect to you have street gang violence on one side, and you have cops that don't want to go in, and you have people that want to be saved, but they don't want the cops coming in. It seems untenable. How do you view Rahm's, the arc of Rahm over this period?
Well, I mean, I think his arc nationally is the same as it's been locally. I mean, he's a vastly diminished figure, right? We used to have, because of his pedigree and the fact that he came from the White House as Obama's chief of staff, I think he was given, and also because of his ambitions, I think, future ambitions politically, was given a great deal of attention nationally. And, you know, most of it, I think, was quite favorable for the most part. Mm-hmm. But now it's completely different. I mean, you had the New York Times conduct a poll of Chicago on its own with the Kaiser Family Foundation. The New York Times did this to highlight the, you know, how poorly Rahm is faring with African-Americans in particular in this city after his, not only the struggle he had with him in his reelection, but certainly how he's fared, how badly he's fared after with the Laquan McDonald tape coming out. So I think, look, he's just, he's in many ways been, had sort of his legs cut off from a media perspective and is in some ways a zombie mayor in the sense that he just doesn't have the, he doesn't have the local clout. He doesn't have the national clout politically or otherwise that he had a year ago. And so where he was once seen as a, I think seen as a, still a, you know, strong influence politically, nationally, and certainly here. And I don't think he has that same, people just don't view him the same way. And I don't think they ever will. In fact, I'd be surprised if he's able to run and win for re-election again.
Locally, he's been criticized for years, but it was always interesting to read the national spin because he worked so hard on sucking up to the Washington Post and the other, you know, the Beltway establishment reporters, and now they seem to have abandoned him or holding him at arm's length as well.
They have, and part of that too, John, is because I think the press has, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement, Ferguson, all that stuff has been, the national press has really covered that with an intensity level. And that, unfortunately for Rahm, dovetailed, you know, with the Laquan McDonald thing in a real negative way for him. And so I think that's part of why they've turned sour on him, is because he's been wrapped up in all of that. And so, again, it's despite his, to your point, he's always been very media savvy and very aggressive in terms of, you know, paying attention to his image, managing his image both locally and nationally, and he's just lost control of that.
Hey, Tom, Jeff Carlin, obviously, I love, as a producer, I love Real Clear Politics. We're talking about this. It's one of my favorite resources, and I've got a crazy, you know, harebrained, almost a conspiracy theory that, and John's laughing because he knows where this is going, but that Donald Trump will, to kind of coalesce the conservative right, will announce and say that, hey, I will select our friend Ted Cruz to be the Supreme Court nominee, just to get the people behind him who may be on the fringe and maybe too far right for Trump's liking. What do you think of something like that? Is that even possible? Is that just way out there? Or I'd love to get Tom Bevin's take.
You know, there. First of all, I had heard that there had been rumors that Cruz had been offering that as a sort of carrot, to saying he would get out of the race if that was the deal that he could strike. I don't know. I mean, first of all, I think I would lean against that for two reasons. Number one, I think I'm not sure that would do exactly what Trump would want it to do. I mean, Trump's already said, look, I don't really need a united party. Ted Cruz was a very, he was a
disunifier
vessel, if you will. Yeah.
Disunifier.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, and not only that, I think, you know, even more so after calling him lying Ted and saying all of the nasty things that he said about him. This is one of the things, the party's so fractured, and the way that Donald Trump has conducted his campaign and the nastiness that's been said, you know, the personal insults that have been hurled back and forth across his campaign, it makes it really hard to turn around. And you've seen it. I mean, Rick Perry just got blasted. I mean, Rick Perry is one of the first ones to come out and say, you know, Donald Trump is a cancer on the conservative movement. He must be excised. And now he's saying, I'll be his vice president. I mean, you know, that's the kind of stuff, you know, the stuff that Marco Rubio has said.
Small hands.
It's making it a very bitter pill for a lot of people to swallow. And can only imagine that after calling him Lion Ted to be like, okay, I want him to have a lifetime appointment on the court. He's certainly qualified, I think. He's a smart guy, and he's got the right background for it. But I don't know that, A, I don't know that Trump would do it, and I don't know that it would necessarily have the effect that that he would want if he you know, was willing to make that deal in the first place.
Excellent. Well, that's the kind of type of analysis I was looking for, because to me it's just a crazy idea, but and people jump at it, like John laughing at it.
No, actually, to tell you the truth, I've mentioned it and was ridiculed by liberal media critics in town for suggesting Ted Cruz as a Supreme Court nominee. I've always thought he'd be an excellent Supreme Court candidate. I think he understands the law and the Constitution as well as many in the public, you know, the public circus. I agree with Tom that after you call a guy Lion Ted, how are you going to make? How do they?
Well, not only that, John. The other thing too is, you know, he has made Ward as a badge of honor. The fact that he had no friends, everybody in the Senate hates his guts,
and they
have
do
to go back to them and try and get. Yeah, but I mean, would he be able to even get confirmed, even if Republicans are able to hold on to the Senate?
That's a good point.
I mean, he's got enough enemies in the Senate, you know, that it would be, it might even be an uphill battle for him.
I'd pay to see Mitch McConnell hold his hand to commit.
Exactly, to right? Lindsey Graham.
Right, Lindsey Graham, no way. Now, clearly, though, what we're seeing is and it's a theme you and I have talked about for years, but really it's coming to fruition now. It's the breakup of the Republican Party. It's like Trump is a symptom, not the answer. He's as I said, Peggy Noonan said, he's the spark, not the the flame. And I just wonder what the future of the Republican Party will be.
Well, that's what's going on, and will be sorting itself out. And it's fascinating. I agree. Look, I think you're right. This was a while in the making, and it's been very interesting to see. We saw some of this in the West Virginia results last night, not only on the Republican side, but also on the Democratic side.
That
people are just so angry, right?
Yeah.
You had the Tea Party movement, which was, I mean, in many respects, the Tea Party movement, particularly when you were talking about, you know, fiscal issues and the Wall Street bailout and all that stuff,
mm-hmm.
right? It was all about ideological purity. They were willing to go to the mat and elect people who had no previous experience over people who had been in Washington, because they thought people in Washington were part of the problem. And we're seeing that now. Now we've got a guy, though. They elected people in 2010. They elected more people in 2014. They don't feel like anything has changed. Now the public is so angry that, especially on the Republican side, they're electing a guy who has no experience, no previous experience. He can be the nominee. And his entire essence is, it's not even ideological anymore. It's all attitude, that he's going to go in there and break these things up. I mean, he just said the other day, John, he just said, I'm the king of debt. I love debt. That's the standard bearer for the Republican Party now.
But didn't right. And he was saying only a few minutes, seconds ago, that the debt is a terrible thing. And now
he said, well, he says, you know, debt's tricky and I know how to deal with debt. And that may be all true, but the fact that he says, I love debt, I mean, that would have gotten you run out of the party a couple of years ago. If you'd said, I mean, in many respects, still would. If you're an elected official in Washington walking around saying I love debt, that's not going to get you very far. But Trump's able to do it and get away with it because I think, again, the public is so frustrated. The Republicans are so frustrated and so angry. They're willing to just blow the place up and burn it down. And so we'll see what sort of, you know, if there's a phoenix that rises from the ashes, that what the Republican Party is going to look like after this is all said and done, assuming he, you know, even if he fails, what's the Republican Party going to do? What's it going to look like a year from now, 2 years from now? It certainly seems like there's people are taking sides. What was a rift has now turned into a real schism.
But he's helping them too, isn't he? Because I think he's helping the former conservatives who have now found religion to once again establish themselves and their. Conservatism is a temperament. I've always argued that. I learned to argue that from William F. Buckley, who used to run a magazine that was quite conservative, and then for years started becoming a big government organ. Under Rich Lowry, I think it's reasserted itself, become more the original conservative magazine than it had been in the past, and I'm thankful for that. But I see all these people now using Trump as the vehicle to sort of cleanse themselves from their own, I don't know, sins of the Bush past.
Sure, sure. Right? And I've talked to folks who are more libertarian in their leanings that are very frightened of what if, you know, Trump is the nominee and we go through this process and he gets wiped out in November, that guess what? You will have the same folks lining up, the ones that you were just talking about, who have absolved all their sins through Trump,
right,
being like, we were right. And
you were,
you know,
wrong.
Now you got to, right, now we're leading the party again. You got to fall in the line behind us. And guess what? We're going back to, you know, the kind of candidates that we had before. That is a fear of folks. If Donald Trump does not win in November.
On the other side, they seem, you know, we're focused so much because Trump's magnetic or barbaric personality is such
right,
that we're compelled to see this barbarian at the gates thing. But on the other side, you have many neoconservatives who used to, you know, were with Republicans, Kagan and others, going to Hillary, worried about Trump because of his so-called non-interventionist or isolationist, depending on whether you want to make it a pejorative or not, view of going to war, even though he's identified, I guess, publicly as a warmonger. And I find this, the hopping of the neocons over to Hillary at a time when Bernie Sanders is ascending to be equally confounding in terms of what kind of schisms they could expect in the future. What do you think?
Yeah, no, totally agree. I mean, it is a fascinating turning of this race, what this race has done. And to your point, I mean, I think there are certainly some prominent Republicans, neoconservatives in particular, that feel a lot better about Hillary Clinton as president than Donald Trump, precisely because of she's more in line with the sort of foreign policy thinking, which.
She could have Lindsey Graham as her war secretary.
What's that?
She could put Lindsey Graham in as her war secretary.
She could. You know? And in some ways, it'll be a continuation of the Obama foreign policy. And in some ways, it won't. I mean, he's been criticized for – he's actually done the worst of both worlds, right?
Right.
He's been sort of a semi-liberal interventionist, but also not – he's also been somewhat of an isolationist, sort of withdrawing American presence from the region, which he's really had sort of the worst of both worlds.
I think the trembling hand.
See Hillary as being more assertive in the Middle East in particular, with, you know, no fly zones in Syria and that kind of stuff. So but again, it's interesting to see how these folks are all lining up.
I still wait for Ron Paul to take the Fountain of Youth and come back and lead us. Okay, but I don't think that'll happen.
Yes.
I do have to. I will not give up. Illinois Republicans and some national Republicans have caused me to sever my Republican tie. I'm not severing my conservative libertarian leanings. That's where I am.
You're going to have to hope. You got to start taking a look at Rand Paul's kids and see if any of them are keeping up.
I'll still wait. I'll wait in the wilderness. In the meantime, though, one serious question I have for you, and that is, understand this is asked of you with great respect. How the hell do I grow a good tomato in the garden? Do you have any ideas on this subject?
No.
Do you grow? You have so many. You have what? 10 kids now?
We should have a regular, communal garden out in the backyard, but we don't. It's actually reserved for sports and scootering and all sorts of craziness. So I do read your columns about food and cooking and all that stuff with great interest, John. And I'm actually in awe of you in that respect because, I can throw a couple things on the barbecue, but that's about it.
Well, the next time I do it, when I do like a media thing in the summer, I want you to come over, okay?
Absolutely. I'll be there.
Bring the family.
You bet.
All right.
Okay, sounds good.
Tom Bevin, Real Clear Politics. Catch him. You'll see him on TV. You'll hear his Real Clear Politics average of polls on every minute. They always refer to it. Find him on the internet where you don't have to watch George Stephanopoulos, but actually just get the quotes from the newsmakers, which is what I do. Thanks so much for being with us today.
You bet, buddy. Thanks.
Thanks, Tommy.
Trump said hello, I think I'm going to run. But he said that before and it was only just for fun. They said he'd never disclose his funds, but when he finally did the
thanks again, Tom Bevan. It's always great to have him on the show. And I love talking to him about trends in media. Unfortunately, I couldn't remember what the word website is.
I cut that out.
Oh, you cut that out? Thank God for cutting that out so no one has to hear that. You know, but there's one other thing that really bothered me about our podcast. Our friend Kristen is like a Game of Thrones betrayer.
I know. I thought we had convinced her. If you listen to the podcast 2 weeks ago, she said she's like, I'm in for the sex and the violence.
And I'm in with you guys, yeah. And we're riding together like three amigo Dothrakis on the plains looking for, you know, places to pillage and conquer. And now she just leaves us alone.
Yeah.
It's just terrible. In the meantime, what the bleep is going on?
Yeah, I don't know. This last episode was amazing. I thought it was very good.
One thing I don't like.
What's that?
I don't like immediately after the episodes are over, the all the newspapers, the websites come up with their recap of what happened.
Yeah.
Like, didn't I just see that?
I know.
Why do I have to read your lame thoughts on it? You have to let these lame thoughts percolate into truly lame thoughts,
exactly.
Like we're doing.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. I think there needs to be a little bit of time, spoilers aside. But yeah, it was a good episode. I can't complain. I mean, it was Arya Stark, like her whole path is getting crazy.
And, now that she can see again.
Right. So
she's no longer blind Arya.
Right.
I'm sad.
I know. This is sad, but she's, you know, it's gonna be interesting. I want to know where she's going to go. That's the best part.
I want to know where she's going to go. I'm also having questions about the evil, but somewhat attractive witch, Melisandre.
Yeah.
The one who brought Jon Snow back to life.
The Red Witch.
The Red Witch, because in one of the earlier episodes, and too bad, okay, this is, if you don't want to hear about it, you know, don't listen. She took off her famous magic necklace and became a 90-year-old woman with...
I think like a 200-year-old woman.
200-year-old woman with, let's put it this way.
Time was not kind.
Time was not kind to that body. No. And although I can't think of a hot 200-year-old woman either. But whatever it was, now if she has sex again,
that's all you're gonna. Yeah,
I'm not gonna be able to process that because it's gonna be too weird.
Yeah, that will be bizarre.
The other thing is now Khaleesi, she's stuck with the Dothraki women. It's like being in a desert burqa. They have to. All the widows have to stay there.
Right.
It's like some weird Greek thing where they all wear black, but instead they have to stay in an area apart from men.
Right.
Right. When is the dragon going to show up? She has to be under attack, and the dragon will show up and save her.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the dwarf, what's his deal?
He's trying to regain power of some sort. I mean, he's in a tough spot.
He would be a great mayor.
Yes.
Or king, wouldn't he?
Yes.
Wisdom, kind. He's kind of kind, but ruthless.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm thinking, John, did you do House of Cards? I mean, we talked about this, but I know you don't really.
I'm going to do House of Cards. I have to. I'm getting over the dog killing
thing.
Yeah,
that was tough. But
I heard the ribs were good, so I'm back. and the thing is about Claire Underwood,
mm-hmm.
You know, people think she's Hillary. No, Hillary is Frank Underwood in pantsuits, and I still want to see it, so I'm starting, I think, this week.
You should. It's great, great political theater. Obviously, fantastical, but it's still good. But I think if there was an Underwood Lannister ticket, you know, that would be a superpower that could not be matched.
With Jaime Lannister as what?
No, Tyrion. Political? Tyrion. Lannister.
Oh, Tyrion Lannister.
Tyrion Lannister. Frank Underwood.
Tyrion as president, Frank as vice.
Yeah, I think so.
Right.
Although I fear that I think Tyrion, knowing enough, would fear for his life to be president, and is smart enough to take. Like the VP position, and it just rule from, like, you know, he would back channel all these things, and he would, you know, make America great again. And stuff
I think
wants to do.
If he were the vice, if he were the president, Tyrion Lannister would have no choice but to walk in on him while he's sitting on the White House commode and pop him with about three or four bolts from a crossbow. That whole thing with the dad,
yeah.
Let's put it this way: was the most edible thing I've ever seen on television. The whole with the hooker and the daddy and the shooting and the toilet. Okay,
yep.
I mean, you can't get any more Psychology Today Freudian.
Very
than that,
Freudian, yes.
Right? But in a Psychology Today,
right?
Way, right?
Absolutely, I concur.
I just love that. Anyway, Jeff Carlin, John Cass. We had Tom Bevan and our friend Christian McQuarrie. Find me on Facebook. Let me know about how to make the best tomato. Because you know what? Tomatoes are good, damn it. And summertime's coming. See you all next week.